This is For the Record, program number 1117. This is being recorded live on February 27th of the year 2020. I want to stress that this program is going to be, to a large extent, interrogatory in nature. I'm going to be, actually that is an appropriate description, since we are going to be talking about experiments with viruses. Sort of a fun with science program. We're going to be taking a look at experiments with avian flu, the recovery of genetic material from the so-called Spanish flu of 1918 that killed millions of people worldwide. Researchers from the Army recovered part of that back in 1997. And we are going to be taking a look at some controversial experiments involving the H5N1 avian flu virus and experiments that adapted that virus not only to ferrets, a mammal that has frequently been used as a subject for flu experimentation, but also the same virus was fitted, I guess one could say, or altered with some genetic material from a 2009 human flu pandemic. This is in connection with the COVID-19 or coronavirus outbreak that at this point is probably the dominant story in all of the world. It absolutely is captivating economic news. It is captivating national security news, national news in this country and elsewhere, local news here in the Bay Area. Hospitals are preparing for the coronavirus appearance. And as we noted in our last program, For the Record 1116, this coronavirus differs from the SARS virus, which had appeared in 2003, in that it appears to be spread much more like the flu. Recapping a short excerpt from an article we read into the record in our last program from Reuters of February 19th of 2020 by Julie Steenhuysen. That's Steenhuysen. New coronavirus spreads more like flu than SARS. Chinese study. And it talks about an article published in the New England Journal of Medicine. And summing up the gist of this is the very last segment, a sentence which is in the last part of the excerpt in the what will be the printed section of this program and also 1116. Quote, "The virus is clearly much more capable of spreading between humans than any other novel coronavirus we've ever seen. This is more akin to the spread of the flu," Anderson said. And the reference to Anderson is to a researcher who was quoted in this article. And that is sort of the key to what we are talking about. Again, that we read a couple of articles into the record in our last program about how this particular virus spreads much more like, again, like the flu, than did previous coronaviruses, including the SARS virus that broke out in 2018. There have been a number of studies that have altered a bird flu, H5N1, to infect ferrets, and also mutating that with some genetic material from a human flu pandemic from 2009. And those experiments basically took a bird flu, an avian flu, and made it respiratory communicable, so to speak, among mammals. They became, as a result of this genetic engineering, what are called zoonoses, or cross-species infections, a disease that goes from one species to another. As we have mentioned in a number of our programs, including For the Record 1111, 1112, and others, there was a ban on the type of experiments that we are going to be talking about, or a moratorium that was instituted in 2014 for safety reasons. That moratorium was lifted in 2017, according to Dr. Joseph Merkel in the paper that we excerpted in many of our programs. And then by early 2019, those very same experiments, including some work done by a researcher who worked both at the University of Wisconsin and at the University of Tokyo, resumed, again, basically making a deadly avian flu, adaptable not only to ferrets, but mutating it in some cases with human flu pandemic genetic material. And the upshot of these mutations, these experiments, was that the virus then became respiratory communicable. They became infections. The virus, I should say, became infections of the upper respiratory tract and could be passed between ferrets. Now, what we're wondering is there a relationship between these experiments and the new coronavirus? A couple of points from the on the outbreak. Before we get into the substance of this, the global economic implications, bearing in mind again the position of Steve Bannon, the position of Steve Bannon at the epicenter of the anti-China movement, his association with Kyle Bass, a Dallas investor positioned to profit not only from a downturn in the Chinese economy, but who knows what else he may be invested in. He is very close to Tommy Hicks, a Republican and Trump administration fellow traveler, who has been intimately involved with various interagency working groups working against China, and Hicks invited Bass to lecture about the Chinese banking system to these interagency working groups. The coronavirus outbreak, or the COVID-19, as the virus has now been named, is truly a major economic factor around the world. The New York Times business page of Saturday, February 22nd of 2020, outbreaks grim toll on global business, and it goes into various things all around the world. Procter & Gamble, auto sales around the world, China being the world's largest auto market, Apple iPhones, and many other things. The virus is present in other countries. We are going to, time permitting, talk a little bit more about the outbreak in Korea. I want to emphasize again that we are asking questions about this and do not necessarily have the answers. Nonetheless, there are some things that are really suspicious. Again, given the fact that this virus not only has appeared in China in the middle of a very obvious anti-China destabilization effort, the timing of the outbreak with the Chinese Lunar New Year holiday, their biggest holiday, and also one that is very much involved with travel around China and out of the country, And speaking of timing, from the post by Dr. Joseph Merkula, it is linked and excerpted in the descriptions to several programs. In October 2019, roughly 6 weeks before the first case appeared, which is the first known case that I'm aware of, was on December 1st of 2019, Dr. Merkula writes, "Equally curious is the fact that Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, the World Economic Forum, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation sponsored a novel coronavirus pandemic preparedness exercise October 18, 2019 in New York called Event 201. The simulation predicted a global death toll of 65 million people within a span of 18 months. As reported by Forbes of December 12th of 2019, the experts ran through a carefully designed, detailed simulation of a new fictional, and that's in parentheses, viral illness called CAPS, or Coronavirus Acute Pulmonary Syndrome. This was modeled after previous epidemics like SARS and MERS, neither of which, by the way, were very communicable via respiratory respiratory activity. Continuing. Sounds exactly like NCIP, that's his name for the new virus, doesn't it? Yet the new coronavirus responsible for NCIP had not yet been identified at the time of the simulation, and the first case wasn't reported until 2 months later. Forbes also refers to the fictional pandemic as Disease X, the same designation used by the Telegraph of Britain in its January 24, 2020 video report, "Could This Coronavirus Be Disease X?", which suggests that media outlets were briefed and that there was coordination ahead of time with regard to use of certain keywords and catchphrases in news reports and opinion articles. Johns Hopkins University is the biggest recipient of research grants from federal agencies, goes on to talk about that, including the Department of Defense. And one of the reasons we are asking questions about whether this virus may have been modified involving some of the genetic mutation of the avian flu virus, again, I was excerpting Dr. Merkula's paper, if research funded by federal agencies such as the Department of Defense or Health and Human Services is classified as being performed, quote, in the interest of national security, unquote, it is exempt from Freedom of Information Act requests. Research conducted under the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, or BARDA, or BARDA, is completely shielded from FOIA requests by the public. Additionally, agencies may deny FOIA requests and withhold information if government officials conclude that shielding it from public view, quote, protects trade secrets and commercial or financial information which could harm the competitive posture or business interests of a company. Again, if in fact there was modification of the coronavirus, we would not necessarily even be able to find out. Now, again, there was a moratorium in 2014 on the modification of certain pathogens, and in particular, the adaptation of an avian flu virus, H5N1, to ferrets, and an experiment in which a related experiment in which genetic material from a human flu pandemic from 2009 was adapted to this particular virus. From Wired Magazine of June 21st of 2012 by Brandon Kine, K-E-I-M, mutant bird flu study fuels fears of airborne H5N1. After months of anticipation, the second of two controversial experiments to increase the virulence of H5N1 avian influenza has been published. Many scientific questions are raised by the findings, and the same safety concerns remain that provoked massive public outcry and a temporary halt to the research. But if there were any doubts about H5N1's ability to become airborne, they are gone. In the experiment, researchers made H5N1 strains that pass through the air between ferrets, which are often used as a model for human flu infection. Catching the highly lethal virus typically requires close contact with an infected bird or a person. The resulting virus did not kill the animals, and it is uncertain if a ferret-infecting strain could also infect people. But the fact that just 5 genetic mutations were needed to produce the airborne strain is troubling. Quote, one of the next key questions is, how likely is it that such a virus could evolve in nature, unquote, said virologist Derek Smith of the UK's Cambridge University at a June 20th press conference. The research was led by virologists Sander Hurst, H-E-R-F-S-T, and Ron Fouchier, F-O-U-C-H-I-E-R, of Erasmus University in the Netherlands, and published June 21st in Science magazine. It's now clear that we're living on a fault line, continued Smith. It could really do something. What we need to know now is how likely that is, unquote. The researchers started by genetically modifying H5N1 to contain 3 mutations identified in previous pandemic flu strains as increasing viral transmissibility. Thus modified, the strain was mutually introduced into the noses of ferrets. Once infection was established, the researchers swabbed the ferrets and infected another group. They repeated the cycle multiple times, mimicking a chain of infection between people. At each stage, some strains became more adapted to surviving and replicating in the ferret's upper respiratory tracts, a precursor to making flu spread by cough or sneeze. By the 10th stage's end, the mutant H5N1 was airborne, passing between ferrets in separate cages. Ferrets infected by the airborne strains didn't die, raising the possibility that becoming highly infectious makes H5N1 less lethal. This, however, is far from certain, and perhaps more time would have produced a more lethal variant. Making the engineered H5N1 go airborne required a total of 5 mutations. Quote, within the first 3 or 4 passages, we are already seeing strong adaptations of the virus, said Fouchier during the press conference. Quote, only a limited chain of transmission is sufficient in ferrets. We assume that in humans, it would take a low number of events for these or similar mutations to accumulate. And skipping down in that same article, calculating the risks and benefits of these experiments, along with experiments that made H5N1 more virulent by mixing it with the pandemic 2009 flu strain, more about that, is a complicated and controversial matter. Supporters of the research argue that potential benefits outweigh the risks, which are enormous. Beyond getting recipes to would-be bioterrorists, or I would say someone who was willing to use that in a national security context, and bear in mind we are in the age of Trump, accidental disease exposures at high-security research laboratories are not uncommon. Again, this last sentence. Beyond getting recipes to would-be bioterrorists, accidental disease exposures at high-risk security laboratories are not uncommon, and flu is extraordinarily difficult to control. Some researchers put H5N1's human mortality rate at 60%, a number likely inflated by epidemiologists overlooking cases that lack severe symptoms. But a mortality rate of just 2.5% killed 40 million people in the 1918 pandemic. More about that pandemic later. Should the findings prove less useful than expected, justification for H5N1 engineering would evaporate. If the findings do prove useful, there's still powerful disagreement over how the research should be conducted. Many critics say H5N1 experiments should be restricted to a few highly skilled people in the world's most secure laboratories. More about this later. of a related experiment. This also from Wired Magazine. This also by Brandon Kine. This from Wired Magazine of May 2nd of 2012. Controversy continues after engineered bird flu study published. After months of controversy, an experiment describing how H5N1 avian influenza can be modified into potentially human contagious forms was published today. The study was originally submitted to the journal Nature in 2011. Concern of its details, along with those in a similar, as yet unpublished experiment, could be turned to malevolent ends, delayed its publication. Subsequent public controversy resulted in a temporary moratorium on such research that is still ongoing. The uproar, however, is far from over. Flu researchers and biodefense experts continue to argue over the findings' safety and scientific value. Quote, given the possibility of accidental escape from the lab, a not too uncommon event, the risks seem to me enormous while the benefits are very small, said Richard Roberts, a Nobel Prize winning geneticist who now works at New England Biolabs. Amino acid structure of the mutant H5N1's modified protein, the positions of four key virulence increasing mutations are noted. In the study, researchers led by virologist Yoshiro Kawayoka of the University of Wisconsin, and as we will see also the University of Tokyo, introduced random genetic mutations to one of the flu virus's eight genes. The mutations changed the shape of the protein the gene produced, allowing H5N1, which until now had great difficulty infecting mammals, including humans, to infect and pass easily between ferrets, an animal commonly used to model human flu pathology. The viruses also attach more easily to human respiratory tract cells. And obviously one of the things I'm wondering here, a question I'm asking, is were there experiments adapting some of that same genetic material to the coronavirus? Because although the COVID-19 is similar to the SARS coronavirus in many respects, it is communicable through the upper respiratory tract, whereas the SARS virus was farther down in the lungs and also was apparently communicable through fecal material. Another article about this. This from Science Magazine of February 8th of 2019 by Jocelyn Kaiser, K-A-I-S-E-R. Exclusive. Controversial experiments that could make bird flu more risky poised to resume. Again, the experiments were resumed. Controversial lab studies that modify bird flu viruses in ways that could make them more risky to humans will soon resume after being on hold for more than 4 years. Science Insider has learned that last year a U.S. government review panel quietly approved experiments proposed by two labs that were previously considered so dangerous that federal officials had imposed an unusual top-down moratorium on such research. Again, this was this lifting of the moratorium done by the Trump administration. Again, Science Insider has learned that last year a U.S. government review panel quietly approved experiments proposed by two labs that were previously considered so dangerous that federal officials had imposed an unusual top-down moratorium on such research. One of the projects has already received funding from the National Institutes of Health, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases in Bethesda, Maryland, and will start in a few weeks. The other is awaiting funding. The outcome may not satisfy scientists who believe certain studies that aim to make pathogens more potent or more likely to spread in mammals are so risky that they should be limited or even banned. Some are upset that the government's review will not be made public. After a deliberative process that cost $1 million for a consultant's external study and consumed countless weeks and months of time for many scientists, we are now being asked to trust a completely opaque process where the outcome is to permit the continuation of dangerous experiments, unquote, says Harvard University epidemiologist Mark Lipsitch. One of the investigators leading the studies, however, says he's happy he can resume his experiments. Quote, "We are glad the U.S. government weighed the risks and benefits and developed new oversight mechanisms. We know that it does carry risks. We also believe it is important to work to protect human health," says Yoshihiro Kawaoka of the University of Wisconsin in Madison and the University of Tokyo. The other group that got the green light is led by Ron Fouché of Erasmus University Medical Center in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. In 2011, Fouché and Kawaoka alarmed the world by revealing they had separately modified the deadly avian H5N1 influenza virus so that it spread between ferrets. Advocates of such gain-of-function or GOF studies say they can help public health experts better understand how viruses might spread and plan for pandemics. But by enabling the bird virus to more easily spread among mammals, the experiments also raise fears that the pathogen could jump to humans. And critics of the work worried that such a souped-up virus could spark a pandemic if it escaped from a lab or was intentionally released by a bioterrorist. Or, I would add, perhaps parenthetically, if some of that same research and some of those same genetic mutations were applied to a coronavirus and used for biological warfare, not by a bioterrorist per se, but by malevolent elements who were willing to do so. And I think it would be a grave mistake, pun intended, to assume that there aren't a lot of people in the Trump administration and Team Trump in general who would do just exactly that. Continuing, after extensive discussion about whether the two studies should even be published, they ultimately were, in a voluntary moratorium by the two labs, the experiments resumed in 2013 under new U.S. oversight rules. But concerns reignited after more papers and a series of accidents at federal biocontainment labs. In October of 2014, U.S. officials announced an unprecedented pause on funding for 18 GOF studies involving influenza or the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, that's MERS, a coronavirus disease, or severe acute respiratory syndrome viruses, that's SARS. One more time. In October 2014, U.S. officials announced an unprecedented pause, unquote, on funding for 18 GOF studies involving influenza or the MERS or SARS viruses. Now, the Health and Human Services Committee has approved the same type of work in the Kawaoka and Fouché labs that set off the furor 8 years ago. Skipping down. Kawaoka's grant is the same one on H5N1 that was paused in 2014. It includes identifying mutations in H5N1 that allow it to be transmitted by respiratory droplets in ferrets. Skipping down. Health and Human Services cannot make the panel's reviews public. One more time. Health and Human Services cannot make the panel's reviews public because they contain proprietary and grant competition information, says the spokesperson. But critics say that isn't acceptable. Quote, "Details regarding the decision to approve and fund this work should be made transparent," says Thomas Inglesby, director of Center for Health Security of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore, Maryland. "The lack of openness," quote, "is disturbing and indefensible," unquote, says microbiologist Richard Ebright, E-B-R-I-G-H-T, of Rutgers University in Piscataway, New Jersey. The critics say the Health and Human Services panel should at least publicly explain why it thought the same questions could not be answered using safer alternative methods. And I would ask the question, and this is not necessarily to say anything bad about Mr. Kawaoka, given the fact that he is also a researcher at the University of Tokyo, is it possible that some of the same Japanese fascist elements that were restored to power as part of the incredible deals surrounding the Golden Lily Loose and the Black Eagle Trust that were covered in the book Gold Warriors, including the incorporation of Dr. Shiro Ishii and Unit 731, the Japanese Biological Warfare Unit, into the Fort Detrick and U.S. biological warfare infrastructure at the end of World War II, where their information, any inquiries I should say about that, also remain opaque. And indeed, something about the individuals we're talking about, not only Dr. Kawaoka, but also Dr. Former Admiral Harry Harris, the admiral who was in charge of operations for the Pacific Command of the U.S. Navy, is now the ambassador to Korea. I wonder about that. We'll talk about that. With regard to any individual in the age of mind control, something at least as important as the development of the atomic bomb or the H-bomb, something that is satanic in its inception, conception, and manifestation, an individual can not only be programmed to do things without his or her awareness or memory, but entire second personalities can be programmed into someone, as was done with Candy Jones, and they can be used for nefarious purposes. And again, that this is entire second personalities. And the individual so afflicted could be tortured to death without disclosing that information. So, again, in talking about any given individual, whether it's former Admiral, now Ambassador Harris, or Mr. Kawaoka, that is to be factored in. We're not necessarily implying anything about their character. In the case of former Admiral Harris, looks to me like he's probably ONI or maybe CIA, but we'll talk about that when we get to it. An interesting detail, actually several, in the actual paper by Mr. Fouché, and this released by the U.S. National Library of Medicine, National Institutes of Health on June 22nd of 2012 by a number of different doctors, including Ron A.M. Fouché. Airborne transmission of influenza AH5N1 virus between ferrets. It talks about this and about mutating. The H5N1 virus, by using genetic modification. Skipping down. The genetically modified AH5N1 virus acquired mutations during passage to ferrets, ultimately becoming airborne transmissible in ferrets. Skipping down. The transmissible viruses were sensitive to the antiviral drug oseltamivir and reacted well with antiseret raised against H5 influenza vaccine strains. Thus, avian AH5N1 influenza viruses can acquire the capacity for airborne transmission between mammals without recombination in an intermediate host and therefore constitute a risk for human pandemic influenza. The antiviral drug oseltamivir, talked about here as being very successful in treating the mutated avian flu virus, is one of the antivirals, along with a couple of other antivirals normally used to treat HIV infection, that have proved quite successful when used in a drug cocktail by Thai physicians. We have spoken about this in past programs. Both Agence France-Presse and Reuters discussed that, and yet there has been no discussion as of last week of this in major American media voices. Again, I wonder, given the draconian nature of the coverage. Again, this is, for most people, this is a relatively mild respiratory infection. If you're older or have other immune compromising factors, if you're a smoker, this can lead to pneumonia and death. But most people will experience the SARS, the COVID-19 infection as a mild respiratory affliction from which they will recover. But given the worldwide economic damage done by this, and by the way, building. I haven't heard the market news from today, but a few earlier days of this week, the market dropped about 1,900 points in 2 days. How's that 501k or 401k looking there, folks? You might want to spread the word. Again, the fact that a relatively mundane drug cocktail of several common antivirals appears to be quite successful in treating this disease. It seems to me there should be much more focus on that. I would note that in today's New York Times there is yet another discussion, more discussion of the drug remdesivir, which was developed to combat Ebola, didn't prove very effective there, but is now apparently enjoying some success in treating this coronavirus. That was made by Gilead Pharmaceuticals, a pharmaceutical giant based apparently right here in the Bay Area, and also one of the largest holdings by Bannon associate Robert Mercer's Renaissance Technologies. If that does become the go-to treatment for this virus, given the size of China as a market and now all over the world, Gilead and perhaps Robert Mercer stand to make a lot of money. Now, in connection with our question, were some of these same experiments adapted perhaps to the coronavirus, the SARS virus, and given the opaque nature, if this was deemed proprietary or for national security research, then we would not be allowed to know that. In For the Record 55 from 1997, we accessed an article which I'm going to reprise here. This is from the New York Times of June 21st of 1997 by GIMA, G-I-M-A, Kolata, capital K-O-L-A-T-A. Genetic material from 1918 flu is found. It reads in part, a group of Defense Department researchers has found genetic material from the notorious Spanish flu virus that killed at least 20 million people worldwide in the influenza pandemic of 1918. Fragments of the virus were found working in a formaldehyde-soaked scrap of lung tissue from a 21-year-old soldier who died of the flu nearly 80 years ago. And now, medical experts say, investigators at last hope to answer a question that has troubled them for decades. What made this virus so deadly? One part of the answer is that the Spanish flu virus passed from birds to pigs, and then to humans, a mode of transmission that is thought to produce the most dangerous strains of influenza viruses. One more time. One part of the answer is that the Spanish flu virus passed from birds to pigs, and then to humans, a mode of transmission that is thought to produce the most dangerous strains of influenza viruses. Indeed, fear of a swine flu epidemic in 1976 caused President Gerald R. Ford to mobilize the nation against, to immunize against a flu strain that infected soldiers at Fort Dix, New Jersey. That particular virus, however, turned out not to be a threat. The search for the 1918 virus is of more than historical interest, said Dr. Jeffrey K. Taubenberger, P-A-U-B-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R, of the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology in Washington, the leader of the team whose report is being published today in the journal Science. Dr. Taubenberger and other researchers hope that understanding the genetic code of the Spanish flu virus might help scientists prepare for the next influenza pandemic, which many scientists think is coming soon. The Spanish flu epidemic seems to have begun in the United States in late spring and early summer of 1918, when doctors reported scattered outbreaks in military installations where recruits were reporting for training before going to France. Spoiler alert, we are also going to access a blog post from the now defunct, that is to say, no longer publishing, Germany Watch blog, which accesses an old book published during World War II called Three Wars with Germany, or Against Germany, that refers to both World Wars, and also a long piece of litigation about German sabotage in the U.S. during World War I. That dragged on from the immediate post-World War I period, right on up through 1939, where Adolf Hitler's Third Reich handled the German end of the maneuvering. And one of the things that came up in that book, it is oblique, I'm going to read some of that, was the possibility that German agents, who certainly were documented as spreading disease to cattle and to wheat, may have actually spread that influenza virus. That remains somewhat speculative. The information that was in the Germany Watch blog post, again, is somewhat oblique. I suspect that the author had information, that is to say, of Germany Watch, had the information from British intelligence that was not actually in that book, but we will see. One more time. The Spanish flu epidemic seems to have begun in the U.S. in late spring and early summer of 1918, when doctors reported scattered outbreaks in military installations where recruits were reporting for training before going to France. By September, when schools opened, the epidemic was roaring through the entire population and spreading rapidly to every corner of the world, attacking the young and healthy and killing them often within days. The flu virus itself is gone, vanished with the epidemic. But scientists have repeatedly tried to find traces of it, studying autopsy specimens and even exhuming bodies buried in Alaska, where they hoped the virus would have remained preserved. Even now, an expedition is being prepared to Spitsbergen, a Norwegian archipelago in the Arctic Ocean, about 400 miles north of Norway, to exhume the bodies of miners who died of the flu. Skipping down, Dr. Taubenberg has studied specimens from Spanish flu victims that are among the millions of autopsy specimens that the Pathology Institute has been storing in warehouses since the Civil War. But he said he doubted the study would succeed in light of the dismal history of failed efforts to find the virus. Also of note here, although not a successful effort, for example, in the 1950s, a group of scientists that included Dr. Maurice R. Hilleman, director of the Merck Institute in West Point, Pennsylvania, who was then directing viral research at the Walter Reed Army Institute in Washington, traveled to Nome, Alaska in a secret mission to examine the exhumed bodies of Eskimos who had died of the 1918 flu. Dr. Hilleman, and Dr. Hilleman is connected with the experimental hepatitis B vaccine that Leonard Horowitz in Emerging Viruses speculates may have been the vector for AIDS. Certainly Merck as an institution has been very closely involved with biological warfare research. It also is the American spinoff of a powerful German pharmaceutical company with links not only to the Third Reich, but to the post-war Bormann Capital Network. Skipping down. Looking in the computerized records, he, that is to say Taubenberger, requested autopsy slides of the lungs of 198 soldiers who died of the Spanish flu. In examining the slides, he looked for a particular type of pathology. Since the flu virus stops replicating within a couple of days after a person is infected, Dr. Taubenberger and his team wanted lung tissue from someone who died quickly, within the week after becoming ill, so that there might be virus particles present. That was possible, Dr. Taubenberger said, because the 1918 influenza strain was so deadly. And then he finally got a hold of some lung tissue, and although the aging of the tissue had broken apart the genetic material, he was able to recap this. Speaking of the man was a private from New York State stationed at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, where he caught the flu. He was a healthy 21-year-old male with no medical history until he got this. The soldier died within 5 days of infection on September 26, 1918, and in October, his lung tissue was shipped to Washington, where it was stored undisturbed for nearly 8 years. Again, Dr. Taubenberger did indeed recover that material. Now, notice the following, skipping down, about the Spanish flu of 1918. Another hypothesis was that the flu had gone directly from birds to humans. One more time. Another hypothesis was that the flu had gone directly from birds to humans. Think about the modified avian flu viruses that we spoke about. That made that virus airborne, transmissible between ferrets. Might some of that research have been some of that same genetic modification have been applied to a SARS coronavirus? One more time, continuing with this New York Times article from 1997. Ordinarily, human flu viruses spread only in humans, but genetically distinct flu viruses also fester independently in birds, which do not become ill when they are infected. Occasionally, viruses from birds infect animals like pigs and then jump to people. Even worse, some researchers proposed might be a virus that jumped directly from birds to humans. And Dr. Kawaoka of both the University of Wisconsin and the University of Tokyo was indeed modifying the avian virus with genetic material from a human 2009 flu strain. Continuing. Antibodies of survivors of the 1918 epidemic indicated that the virus had lived in pigs before infecting humans. But the antibody evidence was indirect, and some thought it might be incorrect. The genetic analysis, however, indicated that the virus had indeed come to humans from pigs. And again, it remains to be seen exactly if any of that research figures into some of the coronavirus research, or will it figure into something else, something that we have spoken about in connection with the COVID-19 outbreak. Is the fact that 2 years ago, the 2017-2018 flu season was the worst in the U.S. in 40 years. 45 million people were infected and 80,000 died. Compare that with the coronavirus epidemic, which in China anyway has killed, 3,000 people, 2,000, it mounts. And the total number of infected, maybe it's up to 100,000, as opposed to 45 million in the U.S. 2 years ago. We didn't hear this chicken little, the sky is falling type of journalism. Or, my God, you better not travel to the U.S. Or no one from the U.S. should travel anywhere else. Most people didn't hear about it. I wonder if perhaps there was some modification of something in connection with that. Was genetic material from this flu virus somehow, the 1918 flu virus, involved in some type of experimentation? Might there have been avian flu modified virus involved in experimentation? Again, that is speculative, but I wonder. Noting again, the post from Germany Watch the blog post from Germany Watch. That. You know what? I think that I'm going to wait and perhaps reread that or read that into the record next week, given the limitation of time, because we do have some other material to introduce into discussion here. I will indeed include that in the broadcast next week. Do note again that there was a Germany Watch post talking about information from the book Three Wars with Germany, and there was the following, there was an exchange of letters between Admiral Hall, who was in charge of military intelligence for Britain during World War I, and some counterparts in America. My dear, and one of the letters from Major Peasley, my dear Admiral Hall, there are grave indications in the cables that the Germans were responsible for the terrible epidemic of disease which occurred among the soldiers in America and on shipboard in the spring of 1918. I note that disease cultures were sent to, quote, Arnold, unquote, the codename of a German agent in South America, and that he forwarded them by a secret agent to the U.S. in January of 1918. Do you know whether that theory has ever been developed and whether any study was made by any medical authorities to determine whether the diseases among the cattle and mules which Arnold was, quote, treating, unquote, for any resemblance to the diseases among our, the disease among our soldiers? Skipping down. Dear Major Peasley, I do not think that any study has been made on the lines you suggest. It did occur to me at the time that there might be a connection between the disease in animals and disease in men. And goes on to talk about that. I wonder if perhaps the Germany Watch Post featured information that was given to the author by British intelligence. One of the things that's interesting to me about that is that the American side of the long international litigation that followed the sabotage, the documented sabotage by German agents in World War I of the Black Tom Arsenal in New York City. The fellow who was handling the American side of that litigation for years was none other than John J. McCloy, who also became Assistant Secretary of War during World War II, was a key Warren Commission member, chairman of the Chase Manhattan Bank, U.S. High Commissioner for Germany, a key Warren Commission member, a member of the, one of the people involved in the formation of the Black Eagle Trust. If, in fact, there was a German BW connection to the 1918 flu, it is altogether possible, and given McCloy's documented role in recruiting Third Reich assets for the U.S. for the Cold War, I wonder if perhaps he got a tip and communicated that to people in the U.S. Again, obviously, speculation. Another factor that I found interesting, and that is something we spoke about in For the Record 1116, there has been an outbreak in South Korea that has been linked to an apocalyptic church called Shincheonji, Shincheonji. This really appears to be a fascist mind control cult in which the founder, Lee Mon-hee, I believe his name is, he has a couple of names, is, you know, the new Messiah. Jesus wasn't really that good, and scripture foretold his coming, and if you believe in him, you're good, if you don't believe in him, you're bad, and you'll be destroyed, etc. They practice mind control techniques on their adherents, sleep deprivation, various other forms of mind control, separating them from their family and friends. And the members of the church are also very, very secretive as well. We spoke about a New York Times article from February 21st of 2020, Shadowy Church is at Center of Coronavirus Outbreak in South Korea, by Cho Sang-hun, C-H-O-E-S-A-N-G-H-U-N, and it talks about the fact that this church apparently was the epicenter of the outbreak in South Korea. What I did not know at the time, I had just before doing 1116 last Friday live, I skipped over an interesting paragraph here. Jung Yun-kyung, director of the Korea Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said the authorities were investigating reports that Shincheonji have operations in Hubei, the Chinese province that includes Wuhan, where the virus emerged. The South Korean news agency NEWSIS, N-E-W-S-I-S, reported on Friday that Shincheonji had opened a church in Wuhan last year, 2019, and that references to it had been removed from the church's website. Church officials could not immediately be reached for comment. Well, one of the things about this, the members of this church are also very secretive, not even revealing to family members that they are members of this. The spin on this article was that perhaps the church in Wuhan, if in fact there is, as there appears to be, a branch of the church in Wuhan, was the vehicle for transmitting the virus back into Korea, which of course is possible. I would ask the question, given the history of various types of mind control cults in Korea, and there are quite a few of them, the best known is the Unification Church, I wonder if, obviously, again, this is yet another speculative element, I wonder if perhaps that church might have been the vehicle for getting the virus into Wuhan in the first place. Certainly, given what members of the church are subjected to, it would not be that difficult to infect one of them and convince them to go there, because the church members are taught, as many cult members are taught, that the disease is produced by somehow some lack of adherence to divine principle, and that if you just, you know, believe strongly enough or pray enough or whatever, you will be cured. So it would be possible for someone to be sick, an adherent to that church to be sick, and not necessarily disclose that. Again, speculative, but I wonder if perhaps it was Shin Chong-ji that was the vehicle for introducing the virus into Wuhan in the first place, rather than a reverse vector route. And by way of conclusion, there is kind of a, I would regard as trivialized, perhaps silly discussion. Admiral Harry B. Harris Jr., a retired admiral, is the new or the recently appointed American ambassador to Korea. He is half Japanese by ancestry, which has ruffled feathers in Korea. But note the following. Again from the New York Times, this from January 16th of 2020, again by Cho Sang-hun, a beat writer for Korea for the New York Times. The American mustache ruffling feathers in South Korea, apparently. The fact that retired Admiral Harris, now Ambassador Harris, was a mustache has ruffled feathers again in Korea. But I would note the following. In an interview with the Korea Times last month, Mr. Harris noted that throughout his career, his ethnic background has come into play only twice, by the Chinese and now by South Koreans. He was half Japanese, which doesn't necessarily mean anything, unless like some of the American diplomats that we spoke about in Gold Warriors, he was married into the families of powerful executives of the Zaibatsu, in his case perhaps the Japanese military, but it might not be anything at all. Dave Roberts, the field manager for the Dodgers, is the son of an American African-American Marine and a Japanese woman. Given the long American military presence in Japan and Okinawa, it's not unusual. However, note the following. When he, retired Admiral Harry B. Harris Jr., was head of the United States Pacific Command, he was outspoken about China's aggressive moves on the East and South China Seas, and China's state-run news media often cited his ethnic background when attacking him. This guy, the current ambassador to Korea, was head of the U.S. Pacific Command. That is a very powerful, powerful position. I suspect very strongly that this now ambassador to Korea, given his dominant, powerful position in the U.S. Navy, which is the elite branch of our military, and that there is an excellent chance that he is undercover ONI, the Office of Naval Intelligence. We talk about CIA a lot. The Office of Naval Intelligence is very powerful and very skilled. I wonder if he might be ONI or even possibly CIA. That does not necessarily mean anything. But given the anti-China push and given his, I would say the excellent chance that he's ONI, and in connection with our speculation about the Shin Chong-ji Church, I wonder if there might be a connection there. And again, in connection with any individual, given the age of mind control, there wouldn't necessarily be any moral judgmental position to take on such an individual. Again, speculation. We are also, this is not speculation, we are out of time. This concludes For the Record program number 1117. I'm going to call this More Than One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, not spelled F-L-U, obviously a reference to the Ken Kesey novel of the 1960s. And this is being recorded on February 27th of 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.